You're listening to Engage with Andy Bush. To connect with the program today, please send an email to andrew.bush@comcast.net. That's andrew.bush@comcast.net. Now, back to this week's program.
Welcome to Engage with Andy Bush. I'm your host. Remember, you can get this show on iTunes after you download the free podcast app by typing in, oddly enough, Engage with Andy Bush. All right, in this segment, we will talk economic policy with Douglas Holtz Eakin from American Action Forum in D.C. Doug, welcome back to Engage.
Thanks for having me on.
All right, this is a big week for economic data with global PMIs and U.S. unemployment data out. But let's start with the key issue facing businesses in the economy, Federal Reserve policy. Now, ladies and gentlemen, Doug writes a great column for American Action Forum called Economics, very, you know, sharply entitled there, and for his last name, obviously. And you can get it free by signing up at AmericanActionForum.org. That's all one word. .org. Now, Doug, this week you put out a great piece on the Federal Reserve that everyone should read. You asked the key question, how does the Fed exit QE and normalize policy?
Well, I think this has been the question for a number of years. People have thought about it, but now they actually have to do it. They've stopped buying assets, so no more MBS, no more treasuries. They're at some point going to have to figure out how to unwind that enormous portfolio they've built up, but the key question for them right now is, when did they start raising rates, how fast do they raise rates, and how high do they raise rates? And that's the thing that markets are trying to understand. The Fed has tried to avoid a calendar. In fact, they went out of their way with a full court press of, you know, Vice Chair Stanley Fischer, Fed New York Fed Head Bill Dudley, all saying, look, this is going to be data-driven, and we'll see how the economy evolves. That doesn't really tell you exactly what they're going to do. And I think there's a real good chance that they ultimately will not raise rates quickly enough. You know, as I pointed out, they could raise rates from, you know, 25 basis points to 175 basis points over the next year, and they'd still have negative real interest rates. And that's a pretty loose monetary policy. And I think if they move rates that much, that'll surprise markets. People will take that as a real abrupt shift. And so odds are they'll move less than that. They'll move slower than that. And I think they're building an inflationary pressure into the economy.
Yeah, and that's certainly something that Charlie Evans from the Chicago Federal Reserve has said. That would be okay. You know, if we've been below our target inflation rate of 2% for a long period of time, we can be above it. But there is an inherent risk there as well, because it's like once you let that inflation genie out of the bottle, it's really tough to stuff it back in. One of the things that I guess surprised me a little bit is somewhat the sanguine nature of Fischer saying, you know, we don't want to surprise the markets. He should know full well that that doesn't necessarily translate into a calm market because of what happened with Alan Greenspan, you know, when he raised, you know, the Federal Reserve Fed fund rate 25 basis points 17 times in a row.
Yeah.
Ladies and gentlemen, that was Doug's sardonic way of saying, nice long intro to that, Andy. Yeah, I get it, right?
The real lesson there, I mean, and the Fed knows this, but they don't quite say it, and it gets them in trouble. Monetary policy is not about keeping the markets happy. It's about stable inflation and good economic growth. Mm-hmm. Markets are a conduit for that. If they spend too much time, as Greenspan did, inching rates up in a very predictable fashion, keeping markets calm, you can sometimes miss the bigger picture on what's going on in the real economy. We've seen that movie before. I think that's what they're going to do here, right? They'll move too slowly. They always do coming out of a recession.
Yep.
They'll build some inflationary pressure in. They'll then have to take it back. And in the process, the markets will, in fact, be a little baffled because they've spent all the time being told they'll move slow and not tighten real quickly. Then they'll suddenly have to move to tightening. And so they'll end up wrong-footing the markets anyway, and they'll get the real economy wrong in the process. It's a storybook that has been read many times, but we've never learned the lesson.
You know, and thank goodness it comes with crayons for me so I can understand what's going on. Well, one of the things that I know that's going on is Janet Yellen has warned everybody, right? She said, look, volatility, expect this. But what do you think that means when she says expect market volatility?
Well, if you look at any of the indexes of market volatility, you know, post the Great Recession and the financial crisis, the Fed just flooding markets with liquidity generated very low volatility on the whole. And I think what she's trying to say is, look, as we normalize policy, we're going to normalize volatility in markets too. You've got to get over this. And, you know, as it turns out, markets have short memories. I mean, they're not thinking back 10 years ago. They're thinking back, you know, 2 years ago. And so we've been in an era of relatively low volatility. And I think that is going to go away. That's a natural part of normalizing monetary policy. And she's also, I think, reflecting the fact that they probably won't do the exit completely cleanly, and there'll be some Fed-induced volatility on top of the normal stuff.
Yeah, and I think one of the places this is already showing up is in the currency markets, which that's my background, ladies and gentlemen, in case you don't know. But I always watch currency markets to see what's happening there is the first thing I look at every morning. And obviously, we've seen a lot of volatility there already. So that's a little bit of the canary in the coal mine. But, you know, talking about volatility.
Well, I'd just say, I'm glad you take care of currency markets because I don't have the stomach for it. I mean, if you think about what's going on right now, you've got one central bank, the Fed, with its problems. You've got another central bank, the ECB, with a whole boatload of problems. Currencies are driven by the relative conditions. So we have two central banks driving those currency rates right now, and that's very hard to figure out what's going on.
Yeah, and well, you brought up the ECB, and I'm glad that you did because we have a tendency to get myopic here in the United States, but Europe's economy increasingly appears fragile, and the Federal Reserve is aware of this. The ECB is starting their own quantitative easing, and by doing so, they will. You know, do you think they will be successful, or are they just going to delay the more difficult choices that really need to be made to reform the labor and agricultural sectors?
I think it'll be a Band-Aid, and it won't be the fundamental reforms. You know, when you look at the U.S., we haven't done the tax reforms, the regulatory reforms, the immigration reforms. You know, you can go down a long list of structural reforms the U.S. needs. We like to think of ourselves as leaders in economic policy. It's much harder for the Europeans to do it. It moves at the pace of international diplomacy because they have so many actors involved. I think the ECB is going to be a patch. They need the reforms, but they can't get them quickly enough.
I love that comment, ladies and gentlemen. Doug snuck that one in there. He said it moves at the pace of, what did you say, foreign policy?
International diplomacy.
International diplomacy. Oh, my God. In other words, it's not quite glacial. It's not up to that speed, but it's somewhere in that neighborhood. But the point is, right, when did Greece make changes to some of their structure in their economy? It was when they were in dire straits, right, when they were about to implode. And that's really the foot on the neck of a politician is when bad things are happening fast. That's when you need to make the changes.
And the real issue is that, you know, Germany has a disproportionate say in things, and the Germans don't view themselves as the basket case. It's everyone else's problem, and they're not going to drive the change. So it's really going to be interesting to see how Europe plays out.
Yeah, and I think the fact that Germany's slowing down, obviously, in some of the PMIs that we got out this week, we saw France continue to slide down, and that will create disruptions for Hollande and the political leaders there. Although Sarkozy was now taking back over the leadership of the Conservative Party in France. You know, to me, with the ECB, I look at it, they're doing what they have to do, but they are clearly, as you said, maybe putting a Band-Aid on this. I think they're going to run into some additional issues. You know, the similarities between the Federal Reserve and the ECB are striking because in the financial crisis, we had both now eventually become aggressive, right? The Federal Reserve, very aggressive in quantitative easing, and also taking over regulation. And the ECB is doing the same thing. They're now quantitative easing, but they're also taking a much larger role on a regulatory side, taking over their largest institutions in Europe to supervise them. What's the danger here for these central banks as they move away from just focusing on monetary policy to focusing on more on a regulatory stance?
Oh, I'm deeply concerned about this. Certainly, as the Federal Reserve becomes the Uber regulator in the United States and taking over the regulation of insurance companies through the Dodd-Frank Act, taking over potentially the regulation of asset managers through Dodd-Frank, they will get a lot of congressional scrutiny and oversight. There's no way around that. They're going to have their fingers in too many things that will affect too many congressmen and senators' lives. And so the Fed's going to be up on Capitol Hill a lot. I think that jeopardizes their independence as a monetary authority. The last thing I want is the Congress trying to do monetary policy. That is not a recipe for success.
What? Ted Cruz? I have complete confidence. This is the capability of not only reading Dr. Seuss, but also reading the tea leaves of the U.S. economy.
I mean, look, we've seen our fiscal policy. Do you really want these guys taking over the monetary controls? No. You don't.
Fantastic point.
But that's the danger.
Right.
And I think this is a treacherous moment for the Fed. I don't know if the Fed really understands institutionally just how much trouble they're in potentially, because they think of themselves as a high-quality regulator. What's the big deal? And mm-hmm. they may be, but the congressional oversight changes that equation considerably.
Well, and don't you think there will be a push for the audit the Fed bill to make some resurgence here and get a lot of scrutiny and discussion because of exactly what you just discussed?
Yes. I mean, one political dynamic we see all the time is – hey, we've got to do something. Even if it's not really the best thing to do, Congress has to show that it's acting on a problem. And if the Fed's got too much authority, well, let's act on it. And the audit bill's the thing at the front of the queue. It's probably what they'll do.
Yeah, I think that's it's a dangerous precedent. Central bank independence is so critical, not only for the United States, but also for Europe and also for Japan, too. And they just recently, not that long ago, got their own independence. And so that's an interesting dynamic, the power struggle between the legislative body, the executive body, obviously, and the independent nature of a central bank is critical, especially, and I want to make this point, especially, Doug, because they're buying the assets of the government. They're buying government paper.
Think about what that did in the U.S. In the crisis, the Fed and the Treasury did all sorts of things. And people forget that sort of toward the tail end of the crisis actions, the Treasury actually put out a statement saying the Fed's independent, right? Honest, mm-hmm. really. And they felt compelled to do that because of the sort of appearance of the collaboration. Then the Fed turned around and bought all these treasuries in QE2 and Twist and then the large-scale asset purchases, and they gave the impression to many on Capitol Hill, quite frankly, that they were aiding and abetting the borrowing of the Obama administration, mm-hmm. and that got them some real political heat. So it's tough to be an independent monetary authority in the best of circumstances, and with the regulatory role and the quantitative easing, it's really difficult to get through.
Yeah, and that circles right back to audit the Fed. All right, let's take a break, and when we get back, we'll ask Doug about tax reform and his top three things to watch in 2015.
Voice America Business Network, the bottom line in business.
Dialogue is the single most powerful leadership tool we have to make a difference in the world. Leading Conversations with host Cheryl Esposito creates a place for that dialogue. Tune into the Voice America Business Channel every Friday as Cheryl hosts new conversations among leaders from around the world in business, government, art, economics, and social change. We'll explore big ideas and everyday actions and learn how their own leadership has led them to discover a newfound sense of possibility in the world. Leading Conversations with Cheryl Esposito, bringing big thinkers together in conversations that make a difference, right here on the Voice America Business Channel, every Friday morning at 10 a.m. Pacific Standard Time.
Workplaces are only as strong as their teams. Teams are only as strong as their individual members. Are you seeking a better way to take your business to a higher level? We're here to help. Listen for Leading with Social Emotional Intelligence, Building Trust Through Intentionality and Vulnerability with host Glenn Harris. Together, we'll explore the five key behaviors of a cohesive team and other concepts designed to keep your team working smarter. Tune in every Tuesday at 4 p.m. Pacific Time, 7 p.m. Eastern on Voice America Business.
We're making it easier to listen to the Voice America Talk Radio Network live wherever you go on iPhone, BlackBerry, or Android. Download it from the Apple iTunes App Store, BlackBerry App World, or Android Market.